Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This article is entitled, Felony Choking Case Ends in Two-Year Term After Guilty Plea, by Trevor Hawes, editor. A man who pleaded guilty to choking a family member will spend the next 2 years in prison. Jorge Luis Escajeda Galindo entered a guilty plea January 24th in the 441st District Court before Judge Jeffrey Robnett. Escajeda Galindo was arrested September 9, 2024, in Midland on a charge of assaulting a family or household member by impeding breath. Court records show the victim was someone with whom he was in a dating relationship. Escajeda Galindo was sentenced to 2 years in prison for the felony choking, as well as 90 days in jail on a separate misdemeanor charge, assault causing bodily injury to a family member. This article is entitled, Man Heads to Prison for Failing to Register as a Sex Offender, by Trevor Hawes, editor. A man has been sentenced to prison for failure to register as a sex offender, a third-degree felony. On August 3, 2022, James Fitzgerald Green pleaded guilty in Taylor County to a charge of sexual assault of a child, according to court documents. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison and was required to register as a sex offender. Green was arrested October 15, 2025, in Midland County for not registering. He entered a guilty plea January 29th in the 238th District Court of the Honorable Elizabeth Beyer Leonard. Green was sentenced to 4 years in prison with a jail time credit of 126 days. This article is entitled, Man Sentenced to 8 Years in Indecency with a Child Case, by Trevor Hawes, editor. A man has been sentenced to prison after pleading guilty in indecency with a child, including sexual contact. Melvin Randall Anderson entered his guilty plea January 27th in the 238th District Court of the Honorable Elizabeth Beyer Leonard. Court documents show Anderson was arrested November 6, 2024, for an offense that occurred September 9, 2024. He was charged with aggravated sexual assault of a child and indecency with a child, including sexual contact. As part of his plea bargain, the aggravated sexual assault charge was dismissed. Anderson was sentenced to 8 years in prison with a jail time credit of 412 days. This article is entitled, Midland Events to Celebrate Valentine's Day. Dances, dinners, and more on tap for annual holiday of love and romance. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Love is in the air, and Valentine's Day celebrations around Midland are kicking off. This year, the holiday celebrating love, romance, and friendship falls on a Saturday. Here's a few Valentine's Day events in Midland. Palentine's Day. Basin PBS will host its Palentine's Day celebration from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The event will feature a screening of a Valentine's Day-themed PBS Kids episode and an arts and crafts section. Snacks and drinks will also be available. Valentine's Day Sock Hop. The Bush Family Home will host its very first Valentine's Day Sock Hop from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. The event will feature candy, root beer floats, games, bubble gum blowing, and hula hoop contests, and a dance featuring 1950s love songs. The Bush Family Home explained the meaning of a sock hop for those unfamiliar with the term. During school dances, kids would have to take off their shoes to protect the varnish of the gym, so they would just dance in their socks. A hop is a 1950s slang term for a dance. Laces and Love Masquerade Sneaker Ball. The Laces and Love Masquerade Sneaker Ball will be held at the Bush Convention Center from 6:30 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. The event will feature dinner and music by DJ Onu Wei and such and such band. The event also honors the late Tammy Whiteside and is a fundraiser event for the Tammy Whiteside Scholarship Memorial Fund. Guests are invited to wear their fanciest mask and their favorite sneakers. Valentine's Day Dance Party. The American Legion Post 19 will host a dance from 8 p.m. to midnight. The event will feature live music by the Honky Tonk Posse Band and dancing. Guests can enjoy free champagne, chocolates and flowers, and a free chicken fettuccine Alfredo dinner. Qualified veterans may also receive a free first-year membership. Yin Yoga. The Desert Hippie and Company will host a yin yoga class for anyone interested in some self-care on Valentine's Day. The session is open to all levels, from beginners to seasoned practitioners. The one-hour yoga session will start at 9 a.m. Tickets cost $20 and can be found on the Desert Hippie and Company's website. Valentine's Day Movie Night. The Museum of the Southwest will host Movie Night, featuring a screening of Lady and the Tramp at the Blakemore Planetarium. The event will feature a pre-show spaghetti dinner, salad, breadsticks, a tiramisu cupcake, and grissini. The meal is made by the former owners of the Garlic Press. Drinks include a glass of Prosecco or sparkling apple cider. Tickets to the event cost $30 per person and can be purchased on the museum's website. Valentine's Day Tarot Readings. The Desert Hippie and Company is opening its doors for special Valentine's Day Tarot Readings. The one-day event was designed to help tap into the energy of your heart and gain clarity on the connections that matter most. The tarot readings are open to couples and single people alike. The readings will be held in 30-minute sessions from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., appointments are highly recommended, but walk-ins are welcome. Each session will cost $30 and can be booked on the website. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 10th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Pfluger pushes for lower drug costs. Congressman favors federal crackdown on pharmacy middlemen who manage benefits. By Trevor Hawes, editor. There's more happening in Washington, D.C. than debate about ICE raids and protests. The release of Jeffrey Epstein documents and the renaming and temporary closure of the Kennedy Center. For Representative August Pfluger, there's a new fight on Capitol Hill whose impacts will be felt by many Americans. And it's only getting started. You have a situation where the big pharmacy benefit managers are owned by insurance companies. They negotiate prices with the government for Medicare and Medicaid. They set prices at the counter. And there's no transparency, Pfluger told the Reporter Telegram. Pharmacy benefit managers act as middlemen who manage prescription drug coverage, negotiate prices, and decide what drugs are covered by insurance. They make money by taking a cut of drug rebates and collecting administrative fees. In some cases, they earn extra profit when they steer patients to their own pharmacies. PBMs also make money from a practice called spread pricing. The PBM charges an insurer one price for a drug, but pays the pharmacy a lower price, keeping the difference as a profit. Ohio banned the practice after an audit found PBMs kept about $225 million in a single year through spread pricing in Medicaid. A similar audit in Kentucky found about $123.5 million was collected annually through Medicaid and instituted a ban. Through 2025's Senate Bill 1236, Texas passed legislation to increase transparency, but has not banned spread pricing. PBMs have been around since the late 1960s, but gained power in the 2000s and 2010s as insurance companies acquired them or built their own. Some of the largest are CVS Caremark, owned by CVS Health, which also owns insurer Aetna and CVS Drugstores. Express Scripts, owned by Cigna. Optum Rx, owned by United Health. PBMs are incentivized to make insurance companies rich and take advantage of those that don't know what's going on, Pfluger said, adding that consumers in need of medications are left with little to no choice in where they can purchase their prescriptions and how much they have to pay. Progress was made Tuesday, February 3rd, when President Donald Trump signed the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2026. PBMs now face new rules over how they can make money and operate in Medicare Part D, which is optional prescription drug coverage for those on Medicare. Starting in 2028, Medicare Part D PBMs can only make money via flat fair market service fees. Spread pricing is effectively banned, and all rebates must now pass through completely. In the past, PBMs could keep rebates. Congress explicitly gave the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and the Department of Health and Human Services stronger authority and scrutiny over PBM pricing, rebates, and compensation practices in federal health programs. Auditing and reporting requirements were also strengthened. This is the conservative principle we're trying to push. Have choice, have transparency, Pfluger said. This article is entitled Second Teen Guilty in Murder of Bystander by Trevor Hawes, editor. A 19-year-old gang member has been sentenced to 75 years in prison for the murder of a bystander in a drive-by shooting. On Friday, February 6th, a jury found Daniel Velasquez guilty of murder in the first degree after a week-long trial. On October 19, 2024, Velasquez and Joe Daniel Ricardo Gutierrez shot and killed Savannah Corrine Calloway Jolly, who was a bystander in a gang-related shooting at a late-night party on Howard Drive, according to the Midland County District Attorney's Office. Gutierrez pleaded guilty to murder in October 2025 and was sentenced to 35 years in prison. He is currently serving time in the Robertson Unit in Abilene, according to state prison records. A third man, Ivan Blake Galindo, was also charged with murder. His bail was originally set at $1 million, though it was reduced to $500,000 on February 19, 2025, and Galindo was released on bond 2 days later, court documents show. His last order of business was a status hearing October 8th, and further information about his case wasn't immediately available. At the time of the shooting, Velasquez and Galindo were 18 years old. Gutierrez was 17 years old. He has a projected release date of October 21, 2059, and has a parole eligibility date of April 21, 2042, according to state prison records. He would be 47 and 35 years old, respectively. Velasquez is currently detained at the Midland County Jail. His sentence of 75 years puts his prison release date in or about the year 2101, when he would be about 95 years old. Velasquez is eligible for parole in 35 years, when he would be about 55 years old. According to court records, a separate case against Velasquez for engaging in organized criminal activity is still open. It dates back to an incident that took place October 1, 2023. Bail was set at $50,000, and he posted bond January 24, 2024. Velasquez's murder trial took place in the 385th District Court of the Honorable Leah G. Robertson. Midland Police Department detectives investigated the murder, and Assistant District Attorneys Bonita Tribble and Henry Eccles prosecuted the case. This article is entitled Watersong Wild Space Opens Job Corps Sign-Up by B.K. Richter, staff writer. Watersong Wild Space, formerly the I-20 Wildlife Reserve, has announced that applications are open for its 2026 Conservation Job Corps program. The program is built to help high school students with hands-on academic skills in conservation through an outdoor conservation project at Watersong, in-class lessons, and weekly field trips across Texas, said the nonprofit. The Conservation Job Corps, a four-week summer program for students, is now in its fourth year of operation. The program, said Watersong, began with 8 students from local public schools, but has recently expanded to include other areas within the Permian Basin. To apply, students must complete an online application that asks them about how interested they are in the sciences, specifically ecological sciences, and what kind of aspirations they have. In return, the Conservation Job Corps offers students a hands-on experience in careers that center on subjects such as land restoration, land management, ecology, and environmental education. The conservation project last year focused on a specific challenge for the outdoor space that addressed an infrastructure issue, the nonprofit said. Due to erosion damage, a trail near the frog pond was constantly under maintenance. A 12-acre property sits adjacent to the wild space and essentially serves as a funnel for floodwaters, washing out the trail each time it rains. We wanted students to come up with their ideas first so that we could discuss and kind of gauge the pros and cons of different erosion control methods, Education Coordinator Evelyn Guerrero said last year during an interview. Guerrero said the specific task assigned to students was to control how the water was going to come down into the flood basin. Using harvested cattails and giant reeds from the wild space, students constructed wattles or bundled barriers to prevent the water flow from causing trail erosion. Additionally, a silt fence was added to capture sediment before it entered the playa area. Another feature of the summer program is accessibility to one-on-one conversations with professionals located within the STEM fields. A big point of our program is the journey, because so many people will study a certain subject, and then their final career that they are now in is different, Guerrero said. We wanted to show the students that there's no pressure. They can choose what they want to choose now, and it's okay to change their mind in the future. To access the application and to learn more about the summer program, visit watersong.org/conservation-job-corps. Only high school students from Midland ISD, Ector County ISD, and Greenwood ISD are eligible to apply. This article is entitled Third DWI Sends Man to Prison by Trevor Hawes, editor. A man charged with his third driving while intoxicated is now headed to prison. On September 4, 2025, Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies arrested Manuel Nunez after they received a call about a man driving recklessly in a gas station parking lot, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. Nunez had hit dumpsters and had run over several parking cones with his vehicle and was found to have an open container of alcohol in his vehicle. Nunez was found to be intoxicated, and a criminal history search revealed a 2018 DWI conviction in Louisiana and a 2022 DWI conviction in El Paso County. On January 29th, Nunez pleaded guilty to driving while intoxicated, third or more, in the 238th District Court of the Honorable Elizabeth Beyer Leonard. He was sentenced to 2 years in state prison with 148 days of jail time credit. This article is entitled Abbott Cuts Ribbon on Midland Lithium Plant. Element 3 Resources' Facility to Extract Element from Water by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Turning the Permian Basin's produced water from oilfield waste to an essential material became reality with the celebration of Element 3 Resources' Permian Basin Lithium Extraction and Carbonate Facility in Midland County. Texas is America's undisputed energy leader, and now it's the leader in the nation's essential elements, said Governor Greg Abbott at a ribbon-cutting ceremony for the facility. The future of America depends on producing the elements essential to our supply chain for products we use every day. Lithium is one of those elements critical to batteries, advanced manufacturing, and national defense. By the grace of God, we have lithium and other essential rare earth materials right here in our own state. He called Element 3's plan, quote, the epitome of quintessential Texas ingenuity, building the first lithium carbonate production plant from oil field waste right here in the United States. Texas is bigger, stronger, and better because of Element 3. Hood Whitson, Element 3 Chief Executive Officer, told the gathering the facility represents a new chapter right in the heart of oil and gas. He noted the Permian Basin produces 1 billion gallons of water daily in its oil field operations, representing one of the nation's largest untapped resources. We were able to liberate lithium from produced water produced by our partner, Double Eagle. This lithium will end up in batteries, power data centers, and transportation, and in electrification. That's why this matters. Whitson credited research done by national laboratories like Oak Ridge National Laboratory and National Energy Technology Laboratory for providing the foundation for Element 3's refining technology. The facility is critical to the nation's economy and security, stated retired Major General John Olson, former Chief Technology Officer at Space Force. He pointed out that the Air Force is the largest energy user. Reshoring lithium production is critical to the nation's economy and its security. About 95% of the world's supplies of critical elements like lithium come from adversarial nations, he said. This is a crowning example of the future, Olson said. This is an example of American entrepreneurship, grit, hard work, and teamwork. Railroad Commissioner Wayne Christian also praised what he called the pioneering, independent, wildcatting spirit of Whitson and his fellow executives, who believe in something and created it. Anthony Pugliese, Chief Commercial Officer at the U.S. Department of Energy, said it was remarkable for Element 3 to achieve the refining facility in such a short amount of time. I'm also proud of our national labs. We've invested billions to address needs, and if we don't deploy that research, what are we doing? He said. For you to take advantage of the work we've done is remarkable. Said Whitson, we will continue to roll out new partners, new facilities. This article is entitled City Confirms Boards and Commissions Appointments by Luke Diaz, staff writer. After months of delays, the City of Midland has confirmed various appointments to several of the city's boards and commissions. They are as follows. Airport Planning and Development Board. Hank Hudson will be replacing Frank Kisner following the latter choosing not to serve another term. Hudson will be part of a 10-person board and serve a 3-year term. Oil and Gas Advisory Committee. Alka Kumar will fill in a vacancy for a petroleum engineer on the committee. There are 5 total members, 3 of which are required to be petroleum engineers, and each serves 3-year terms. Parks and Recreation Commission. Joy Paulson of Keep Midland Beautiful will fill in a vacancy, serving along 9 total board members for a 3-year term. 4 other members of the commission were also reappointed for a new term. Planning and Zoning Commission. Following the departure of Chairman Abraham Bayhill, who is now on the Midland Development Corporation Board, alternate Commissioner Joshua Garza will assume the vacant spot on the P&Z Commission. There are 7 members and 2 alternates, each of whom serve 3-year terms. Brianna LaFoy has been appointed to fill Garza's alternate spot. Zoning Board of Adjustment. Rachel Walker and Elizabeth Moore were both reappointed to another 2-year term each. They make up 2 out of 5 members of the board, alongside 4 alternates. More appointments for unstaffed positions are expected in the future, with each being further delayed due to a lack of applicants. These include the following: Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District Board, replacing Bob Kreitz, who left the board mid-term; Midland Housing Authority Commission, 1 vacancy and 2 reappointments; Midland Spaceport Development Board. Details on each of the boards and commissions can be found on the city's corresponding webpage. This article is entitled "Council to Weigh New Rules for Sex Offenders" by Luke Diaz, staff writer. Midland City Council is set to conduct its next meeting at 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 10th. Here are agenda items that the Reporter-Telegram is watching. Sex offender regulations. After previously deferring the item by a 4-2 vote January 13th, City Council will look to approve an ordinance that would amend Title VI of the Midland City Code and put greater restrictions on where sex offenders can reside and travel within Midland. The ordinance was originally scheduled to go into effect on February 1st. Council members John Burkholder and John Norman voted against deferring the ordinance. Flock cameras. The city will look to execute the renewal of a subscription contract with Flock Group, Inc., to install a license plate recognition camera system and its associated software. Costing $451,000, there are intended to be a total of 73 LPR cameras, 71 fixed and 2 portable, under the contract, which will be valid for 24 months. Sparks Park. The city will look to approve a contract that will allow for the installation of a new restroom facility at Sparks Park. The purchase, estimated to cost $243,772, will be done through Buy Board and with Restroom Facilities LTD. The restrooms will be similar to those at Ulmer, Dennis the Menace, Dunnigan, and Hogan Parks, according to meeting materials. The current facility is in disrepair and will have to be demolished. Citywide Paving and Drainage Program. The city is looking to award a contract to Rhys Albert for a program to repair paving and drainage across streets all over Midland. The project budget is capped off at $1.5 million. Cooperative Purchasing Program. The city hopes to execute an interlocal agreement with the Harris County Department of Education as part of the Cooperative Purchasing Program. Under Texas Government Code 271.102, such an agreement will allow the 2 branches of local government to purchase needed items from each other. Cybersecurity Grants. The city is seeking to submit 4 separate grants to the Office of the Governor for the State and Local Cybersecurity Grant Program. Each grant targets different aspects of cybersecurity, disaster recovery plans, disaster simulations, investments in new technologies, and the designation of tasks to different government officials. If approved, will go into effect during the city's 2026-27 fiscal year. Venue at Live Oak. Following the removal of its noise restriction, the venue at Live Oak seeks to renew its license to be able to play outdoor music on its stage. This is the Life Tributes column. Maria Blanca Madrid. Maria Blanca Madrid, 68 years of age, of Midland, was called home by our Lord and Savior on February 1st. Maria Blanca Madrid was born on June 21, 1957, in Ojinaga, Chihuahua, Mexico. She is the daughter of Jorge Quintela Gonzalez and Maria Socorro Venegas Gonzalez. She is survived by her husband, Jamie Fernandez, and her two children, Thomas Madrid and Giovanni Madrid, as well as 10 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by her 8 siblings, Gloria Gonzalez, Jorge Gonzalez, Anita Gonzalez, Adelaida Gonzalez, Efren Gonzalez, Alberto Gonzalez, Gilberto Gonzalez, and Amalia Ahrens. Viewing will be from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday, February 10th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, February 11th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Elvira Contreras Ontiveros. Elvira Contreras Ontiveros, 77, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, February 4th, surrounded by her loving family. Visitation will be held on Monday, February 9th, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a rosary at 6 p.m. Funeral service will be held on Tuesday, February 10th, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel at 10 a.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Mary Mitzi O'Neill. Mary Durham O'Neill, a longtime Midland resident, died on February 2nd at the age of 98. A vigil for the deceased and rosary service will be held in St. Anne's Chapel on Friday, February 20th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. A mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at St. Anne's Catholic Church on Saturday, February 21st at 10 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
And up next, Midland ISD student named National Merit Finalist. A Midland ISD student has been named a National Merit Finalist for the Class of 2026. Young Women's Leadership Academy senior Jillian Bayhill earned the prestigious distinction through her exceptional academic achievement, commitment to excellence, and demonstrated leadership. Her accomplishments exemplify excellence in action across Midland ISD. Our National Merit Finalist represents the best of what is possible when talent, dedication, and opportunity come together. Jillian's achievement reflects on countless hours of hard work, the support of her family and educators, and a commitment to excellence that makes our entire community proud. Kathleen Cook, MISD Advanced Academics Coordinator, said in a news release, "Earning the distinction of National Merit Finalist places Bayhill among the top academic performers nationwide. This recognition signals to colleges and universities that she ranks among the country's strongest scholars and may enhance opportunities for admission to highly competitive institutions and access to scholarship support. As a finalist, Bayhill advanced through a rigorous selection process that considered PSAT, NMSQT performance, academic achievement, leadership, community service, employment, and honors earned. Fewer than 1% of U.S. high school seniors are recognized through the National Merit Scholarship Program, making this achievement especially noteworthy. National Merit Scholarship recipients will be announced this spring. Well, hello there. This is Jim, and I'll be reading from the Odessa American for February 10th, 2026. Midland College is proud to announce the next installment of the Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series featuring Anna Marie Chavez, former CEO of Girl Scouts of the USA, transformational leadership expert, and recognized by Fortune magazine as one of the 50 greatest leaders. This free community event will take place Thursday, March 26th from 7 to 8 p.m. at the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center. Chavez is celebrated for her visionary leadership and dedication to public service. She revitalized the Girl Scouts for a new century, transforming the organization into one of the top 10 most innovative nonprofits in the world. She's earned recognition in the STEM Leadership Hall of Fame and Fast Company's 2014 Most Creative People in Business, and she continues to be a leader in shaping the next generation of changemakers. Midland College is thrilled to welcome Anna Marie Chavez for the Spring 2006 Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series, Dr. Adrian Vega, Vice President of Strategic Partnerships and Development, said in a news release. She is truly a powerful leader whose life and career exemplify the impact of authentic, value-driven leadership. This event is a perfect reflection of Midland College's commitment to providing free, accessible opportunities for our community to engage with leaders who inspire, challenge, and empower. We hope everyone will join us for an evening of insight and inspiration. Born and raised in rural Arizona to Mexican-American parents who valued education and community, Chavez earned her undergraduate degree from Yale University and her law degree from the University of Arizona. She's been admitted to the bar of the United States District Court for the District of Arizona, the Arizona Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court. Chavez has led the National Council on Aging and the National School Boards Association. Currently, she serves as Chief Impact Officer of Encantos, a nonprofit educational platform connecting creators with children to inspire learning and the development of 21st century skills. Passionate about teaching the value of leadership, teamwork, and the importance of taking risks and learning from failure, Chavez provides insights that inspire individuals and organizations to lead authentically, collaborate effectively, and create positive impact in their communities. The Davidson Distinguished Lecture Series invites the community to join this inspiring conversation. The event is free and open to the public, but attendees may reserve a general admission spot, while preferred seating is reserved for 2026 members of the Friends of the Series. And up next, nurse practitioner seeks Precinct 2 seat. Lifelong Odessan Jason Payne, a nurse practitioner, is one of five Republican candidates vying for the Precinct 2 commissioner seat, being vacated by longtime Commissioner Greg Simmons. The March 3rd primary will decide the race, as there are no Democratic challengers in November. One candidate must receive more than 50% of the vote. If not, the top two vote-getters in March will face off during a runoff. Early voting begins February 17th and ends February 27th, ahead of the March 3rd. Third primary day. During a Thursday candidate forum in Gardendale moderated by GOP precinct chair Jet Brown, candidates were asked how the county could trim the budget. Payne told the crowd of about 50 people that cutting some of the county's administrators would be a way to cut costs. Payne said he is running for county commissioner because the county needs more transparency and accountability on certain projects. Payne noted specifically the new courthouse project, saying he wished the commissioners were more open and transparent through the planning process, which he said may have calmed the frustration among residents when higher tax bills showed up. During a recent candidate forum, Payne and the other four men seeking the seat detailed they are all lifelong Odessans who want transparency and to keep a close eye on the coming new Ector County Courthouse, which is being built with more than $300 million in certificates of obligation. All those vying for the seat have said the funding of the courthouse should have gone to the voters for approval. This is the first time Payne has run for public office. He said along with transparency and accountability, he wants there to be a focus on park spaces along with areas for families and children. Payne said residents have told him there's a lack of information. He said residents are not aware of what's going on. He said many told him there are no details on projects or status updates on prior projects. Public meetings on the courthouse project have been held since last year, including one last week, which was rescheduled due to the January ice storm. Ector County has a website dedicated to informing the public at newcourthouse.com. The Precinct 2 seat is currently held by the retiring Greg Simmons, who will not seek re-election position after more than two decades. The Ector County Republican Women and Petroplex Association of Realtors plan a candidate forum at 6 p.m. February 19th at the Elegante. Basin PBS will hold a debate 7 p.m. February 17th. There is limited seating at the Midland studio, but the debate will be live streamed. Others seeking the seat, which pays $60,000 plus an annual $5,400 car allowance, include Grayson Hankins, Richard Pierce, Don Stringer, and James Poor. And up next, disturbance investigation leads to arrest. On February 9 at approximately 12:52 a.m., deputies with the Ector County Sheriff's Office were dispatched to the area of Paula Street and Moss Avenue in reference to a disturbance, a news release said. Upon arrival, deputies learned that two gunshot victims had arrived at Medical Center Hospital seeking treatment for injuries sustained. Deputies located the subject involved in the disturbance, identified as Miguel Angel Silva Garcia, a white Hispanic male, the release said. According to the release, a firearm was located near Silva Garcia at the time he was contacted by deputies. Further investigation revealed that Silva Garcia had an outstanding warrant. He was taken into custody and is currently being held at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on an immigration hold. The incident remains under investigation. And up next, Holly Rowe to speak at JBS Lecture. By Ruth Campbell. Holly Rowe, one of the most respected and recognizable voices in sports journalism today, will be the speaker at the John Ben Shepherd Leadership Institute Distinguished Lecture Series at 7 p.m. February 10th at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. An ESPN sideline reporter and commentator for more than 25 years, Rowe has covered many of the most high-profile events in sports, from college football to the NCAA Final Four and the NBA. The Distinguished Lecture Series is a program of the John Ben Shepherd Leadership Institute and a meaningful way UT Permian Basin connects with our community and offers conversations around leadership and learning. UTPB Senior Vice President for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management, Becky Spurlock, said, Holly Rowe is a trailblazer as one of the nation's top sports journalists, a resilient leader, and a passionate advocate for community, health, and joy. Through UTPB's Shepherd Leadership Institute, we are providing a free community lecture where Holly will share insights from her award-winning career with ESPN, her journey as a cancer survivor, and her work founding the Joy Plus US Foundation. We are thrilled to have such an inspiring individual come share her story about resilience, leadership, and finding joy in the face of adversity, a message that will certainly resonate with families across West Texas, Spurlock said. Beyond her celebrated broadcasting career, Rowe is a stage 4 melanoma survivor whose personal journey has made her a passionate advocate for cancer research, early detection, and prevention, the JBS website said. Her storytelling, authenticity, and resilience have inspired audiences across the country. Last year, she founded the Joy Plus US Foundation, dedicated to bringing joy to individuals facing life's toughest challenges. The event is free to the public, provided by the Shepherd Inner Circle donors. The Wagner Noel PAC adheres to a clear bag policy. JBS is a lecture series hosted by the John Ben Shepherd Public Leadership Institute at the University of Texas at Permian Basin, featuring renowned leaders, authors, and figures like Terry Bradshaw, Jackie Joyner Kersee, and Robert M. Edsel discussing leadership, public service, and current events. It's a signature program known for bringing influential speakers to the Permian Basin, covering diverse topics from sports to history and politics. And up next, Midland Memorial Hospital announces temporary diversion of trauma surgeries. Effective immediately, Midland Memorial Hospital, MMH, is on temporary diversion of all trauma surgeries. During this diversion period, patients requiring trauma surgery who are transported by ambulance will be taken to alternate facilities. The diversion is necessary due to temporary issues with hospital sterilization equipment, a news release said. MMH staff and vendor partner Steris are actively working to repair the sterilizers, and the situation is being closely monitored. Updates will be provided as additional information is available, the release said. MMH will continue scheduled surgeries at this time unless you have received communication with alternative instructions. In addition, MMH is temporarily closed to out-of-county patient transfers for surgical procedures. MMH remains committed to ensuring patient safety and high-quality care. We appreciate the community's understanding as we work to resolve this matter as quickly as possible, the release said. And up next, shooting results in arrest of Odessan. An Odessa man was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon following a Saturday evening shooting that left the victim in stable condition. According to the Ector County Sheriff's Office, deputies learned of a gunshot victim in the 2900 block of South West Cliff shortly after 11 p.m. Saturday. They were taken to Medical Center Hospital. Deputies were given a description of the suspect's vehicle, and when it was found, a passenger, Abraham Del Hierro, fled on foot, authorities said. He was caught after a brief foot pursuit. Del Hierro was booked into the Ector County Jail under the last name of Del Hierro on the assault charge, evading arrest, and theft of a firearm. His bail was set at $62,500. The driver of the vehicle, David Orlena, was arrested on outstanding traffic warrants and released to Immigration and Custom Enforcement agents. The investigation remains ongoing.
Battalion Oil shifts gas processing after Wink outage. Delaware Basin-focused Battalion Oil recently announced several operational updates regarding both its gas treatment arrangements and production performance. The Houston-based company has terminated its gas treating agreement with Wink Amine Treater LLC, related to its acid gas injection facility. Battalion has also entered into a gas treating agreement with a publicly traded large-cap midstream company it declined to name. In announcing the changes, Battalion management noted that the Wink Amine Treater AGI facility had ceased operations around August 11, 2025, and remains out of service. This prompted the company to exercise its contractual rights to terminate the gas treating agreement. After terminating its contract, Battalion reached an agreement with the large-cap midstream provider to process its gas at an alternative processing facility. The company had been using this midstream partner since Wink's AGI facility went offline. After a significant facility expansion was completed in the fourth quarter of 2025, the midstream company is now able to process substantially all of Battalion's gas volumes from its Monument Draw field. In conjunction with the midstream partner's expansion, Battalion has continued to ramp production into this alternate processing facility throughout late December and January. Most recently, the facility has been processing more than 30 million cubic feet per day of Battalion's gas production, compared to a December average of approximately 17.4 million cubic feet per day. The additional processing capability has allowed Battalion to benefit from additional flow assurance and operational reliability, resulting in an increase in Battalion's average oil production of approximately 1,200 net barrels of oil per day, month to date in January, as compared to the company's December average. This announcement came just weeks after the company said it was selling substantially all its properties in the West Quito Draw area of Ward County to MCM Delaware Resources for approximately $62.59 million. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, Battalion said the properties include the approximately 6,207 net acres. Proved reserves from these properties accounted for approximately 8 million barrels of oil equivalent, or approximately 12.4% of the company's 2024 year-end proved reserves. Battalion said in its filing it intends to use the net proceeds from the divestiture of the West Quito assets, if such transaction closes, to repay amounts outstanding under the company's senior secured credit agreement and for general corporate purposes, including funding potential acquisitions and planned drilling expenditures. Battalion Oil shifts gas processing after Wink outage. Delaware Basin-focused Battalion Oil recently announced several operational updates regarding both its gas treatment arrangements and production performance. The Houston-based company has terminated its gas treating agreement with Wink Amine Treater LLC, related to its acid gas injection facility. Battalion has also entered into a gas treating agreement with a publicly traded large-cap midstream company it declined to name. In announcing the changes, Battalion Management noted that the Wink Amine Treater AGI facility had ceased operations around August 11, 2025, and remains out of service. This prompted the company to exercise its contractual rights to terminate the gas treating agreement. After terminating its contract, Battalion reached an agreement with the large-cap midstream provider to process its gas at an alternative processing facility. The company had been using this midstream partner since Wink's AGI facility went offline. After a significant facility expansion was completed in the fourth quarter of 2025, the midstream company is now able to process substantially all of Battalion's gas volumes from its Monument Draw field. In conjunction with the midstream partner's expansion, Battalion has continued to ramp production into this alternate processing facility throughout late December and January. Most recently, the facility has been processing more than 30 million cubic feet per day of Battalion's gas production, compared to a December average of approximately 17.4 million cubic feet per day. The additional processing capability has allowed Battalion to benefit from additional flow assurance and operational reliability, resulting in an increase in Battalion's average oil production of approximately 1,200 net barrels of oil per day, month to date in January, as compared to the company's December average. This announcement came just weeks after the company said it was selling substantially all its properties in the West Quito Draw area of Ward County to MCM Delaware Resources for approximately $62.59 million. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, Battalion said the properties include the approximately 6,207 net acres. Proved reserves from these properties accounted for approximately 8 million barrels of oil equivalent, or approximately 12.4% of the company's 2024 year-end proved reserves. Battalion said in its filing it intends to use the net proceeds from the divestiture of the West Quito assets, if such transaction closes, to repay amounts outstanding under the company's senior secured credit agreement and for general corporate purposes, including funding potential acquisitions and planned drilling expenditures.
This is the Dear Abby column. Man opts to take ex on trip instead of his girlfriend. Dear Abby, my boyfriend of several years, Guy, often asks me to take a trip with him. I have researched accommodations at the suggested destinations, only to have him say they're too pricey. Thus, we never go anywhere, although he could easily afford it. Now his brother, whom I've never met, has suggested a family cruise and suggested that Guy bring along his ex-wife, who is in the early stages of dementia. Guy has been divorced from her for decades. I haven't said anything to him about this, though I am shocked and hurt that when a trip is finally planned, Guy thinks it's fine to take her rather than me. I'd be okay with him not taking either of us, but not with choosing her over me. Am I the crazy one here? P.S. Right now, I am dog-sitting for Guy for the second time in a month, while he's out of state for a week attending to his ex-wife's legal matters, including her will. Signed, Home Alone in Florida. Dear Home Alone, something definitely seems out of focus in this family picture. Your boyfriend has been divorced from his ex for decades. Is his brother oblivious to the fact that you have been Guy's companion for several years? If this is a question of money, it seems to me that a more practical solution than leaving you out would be for Guy to bring you along on the cruise, and he and his brother split the cost of including his former wife. Dear Abby, my husband Dan and I are separated. Our children are ages 20 and 22. Dan has just been diagnosed with some type of serious medical issue, likely life-threatening. He has shared the information with our children, but refuses to explain to me what is happening. I am not being nosy. I simply believe that I should be aware of what's going on for the sake of our children. Our kids are not currently on speaking terms, so they won't discuss the issue with each other. One of them still lives at home and has been diagnosed with autism, ADHD, PTSD, and major depressive disorder. They are not doing well and have been hospitalized multiple times over the past 5 years. They have no friends and no contact with extended family. The only people they interact with are me and their father. I feel it is very important to keep me informed so I can offer support and help both of our children deal with whatever is happening. Am I wrong to ask my ex to explain to me what is going on? Signed, In the Dark in Vermont. Dear In the Dark, you are not wrong to ask your estranged husband for that information, in light of the fact that one of the children you share has so many mental health challenges. However, if he refuses, you will have to accept it and deal with your children as best you can with limited information. Believe me, you have my sympathy. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips, and was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.